Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
The news from Kyiv this morning sounds a little bleak, with Western weapons deliveries limited and slow. Ukraine facing a bleak winter. Its outnumbered and outgunned military is slowly but steadily losing ground on the main eastern front, trying to exact a heavy toll on Russia while minimizing its losses. Russian missile and drone attacks targeting Ukraine's energy infrastructure are overwhelming the country's air defenses, forcing rolling blackouts across the country that could worsen in winter. Let's check in with Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. Joe, is that an accurate report on the situation? What are your sources saying?
Hey, Bob. Well, good afternoon from Lviv. At this moment right now, the power situation is stable throughout most of Ukraine. So the expectation is that as soon as the weather gets significantly colder, that it is indeed going to be a very difficult winter. You know, in the summertime, especially in the month of July, much of Ukraine was without power most of the day. It's pretty excruciating for people who lived, higher levels of tall buildings, having to climb steps. The elevators didn't work. It was a very difficult summer, and since then the Russians have continued to attack the energy infrastructure, and there's more and more evidence that with these frequent attacks, the Russians are hitting the substations near the nuclear power plants rather than the nuclear power plants themselves. But what they're doing is making it almost impossible for that energy to be transferred throughout the country. And so I think from what I hear from most experts on this, you know, even just a few more of these intense attacks could really cripple Ukraine's power infrastructure, such that it could be, you know, you, instead of a few hours a day without electricity, it could be days and days. And so this is a very serious thing. And I think, you know, one thing that comes up a lot for me in recent conversations are the missed opportunities. You know, back in the late summer, we had, you know, Ukraine had that extraordinary incursion or advance into Russia, into the Kursk region of Russia. And they were able to do it. You know, they kept it secret from Washington. You know, they surprised the world. There were no leaks about it. They surprised Russia. And with very little resistance, they were able to move into that region, that province of Russia. And they're still holding that territory. But I think the hope from Ukraine's perspective was that that would have garnered a lot of support, that would have changed momentum. It would have shown the West, hey, look, Ukraine can win. You know, Americans love a winner. And we can do it. We're on Russian soil. And Russia still has no major response to that. But instead, that kind of, you know, has disappeared from the consciousness, that amazing feat. And it did not serve, while still, you know, Ukrainian presence there in Russia can be an important bargaining chip. It didn't serve the purpose of sort of igniting this, you know, big level of new support and momentum for Ukraine. And, you know, I think that's something that's really frustrating. You know, you put all this effort into doing an extraordinary feat, the only foreign army to enter Russian soil since World War II, and you know, the underdog achieved it, and not to have that, you know, go anywhere or even get recognized is a heavy recognition that that many in the West don't really believe that this can work. And I think as we look at the presidential election, you know, we see Trump, you know, saying, oh, he can call Putin and make a deal, but people are obviously skeptical of that. And then I just read in the Times of London that working on the campaign of Kamala Harris is the daughter of Alexei Navalny, which on the face of it, I think to many Americans, that sounds like, oh, great. You know, this means that they're, you know, the Harris campaign is really on the side of Ukraine. But Ukrainians are deeply skeptical of the Navalny's. And, you know, the cover right now of the New Yorker magazine is of Navalny, who died in February. And, you know, this is where I think Ukrainians are feeling a little bit of suffocation. Why is one Russian, you know, being promoted, you know, almost a year after his death? Why not a cover about what Ukrainians have done in Kursk, or, you know, the continued Ukrainian resistance? I saw a report today from a Ukrainian, a woman doctor who's in the military, And she's done a lot of research and talked with a lot of people about women who have survived Russian occupation. And she said there's two methods when Russians, the way they rape Ukrainian women. She said first, when they occupy a village or city, they sort of, you know, they just plunder, but it's less violent. They rape and they steal. But she said then when they know that they're leaving, when they're losing, in the cases when Ukraine is about to liberate the village and the Russians are fleeing, she said that's when they become more violent than words could even describe. And women end up dying as a result. And so all of this is, you know, a lot of these stories get missed. And even as yesterday, almost right when we were speaking yesterday, so I didn't report it to you, the city of Odessa came under heavy attack. One of the biggest Russian missile attacks on that port of Odessa, that park that I used to run in, where I've been there during a much lesser attack, and that was scary enough. The Russians hit cargo ships, including one that was flagged from Belize. And, you know, I can't imagine being someone working in that port, but the Russians are doing everything they can now, attacking cargo ships at the port to prevent Ukraine from being able to send grain to the world. And it was a very brutal day in Odessa yesterday.
Yeah, very scary stuff. On a lighter note, here's a question for you from one of our listeners, Joseph, regarding the musicians we've been talking about. Is there any way possible that the Ukrainian musicians can tape a performance and put it out and sell it to people and use it as fundraising and bring joy?
That is an excellent idea. I will pass that on to them when I talk to them today. And in fact, they have a videographer traveling with them to record these moments. And I'm hoping when I have time to put together, I just saw a video from when they were playing at a high school in Charlotte, my hometown in North Carolina. And the interaction of the American high school students with the Ukrainian soldiers was such a powerful thing. So I'm going to try to put that together, and I'll let you know when we can share it with the audience. But that is... I think, you know, when we get beyond all the political high level stuff, it's really the personal connections. As I see from every person who comes to Ukraine from around the world, it's the personal connections when people say, OK, let's stand together. Mm-hmm. For example, we hear even the United Nations Secretary General speaking about Gaza and saying Gaza is the worst tragedy, you know, ever in recent memory. And you don't have to compare it, but, you know, there also are entire cities that together are the size of Gaza in Ukraine that are totally deleted and missed from the conversation.
We have to keep this story at the forefront. And thanks for doing that for us, Joseph. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Until tomorrow. Thank you, Bob.